Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Retiring Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer wants to abolish the Electoral College. She filed legislation yesterday calling for an amendment to the Constitution that would end the system. It's a call that is getting a lot of support from Democrats as it becomes more certain that Hillary Clinton will win the popular vote. She's leading now by about 1 million votes, with the final count to come. Andrew Rudalevich is a professor of government at Bowdoin College. He joins us from Portland, Maine. Welcome.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And this bill from Senator Boxer has almost no chance of making its way through the Republican House and Senate and past the president's desk, but it makes a statement. How long have people been trying to get rid of the Electoral College?
Well, from pretty early on. I mean, there have been more than 700 resolutions introduced in Congress to try to change it or straight out repeal it. And so this joins a long line of attempts to shift the way that our presidents are chosen.
What are the problems with the system right now?
Well, I mean, the most basic problem is that different people's votes count unequally. And so if you start from the premise that one person, one vote is the only legitimate way to select the only legitimate winner, then you do have a pretty strong problem of democratic theory here. The person who gets the most votes can lose.
It's also bad for third parties, I've read.
Well, it is, because the winner-take-all nature of the system, as in any sort of first-past-the-post system, tends to reduce your choices to two, right? Any other choice is a wasted vote. And so, going back to 2000, a vote for Nader is a vote for Bush sort of thing. And people were talking about that this year with regards to Governor Johnson and Dr. Stein.
On the other hand, people who are in favor of the Electoral College would say this is the reason that candidates have to pay attention to states that may not have huge populations but are very important nonetheless.
Right. I mean, the basic idea, right, is that the American republic rather than democracy, it's a democratic republic. It's a representative democracy that seeks to build consensus across very many different coalitions. And you see lots of structures in the Constitution that protect the rights of minorities. And so the Electoral College, even though, if we go back to the Constitutional Convention, it's certainly a compromise, right? It's not a random compromise. It's one that fits into a federal system of separated and checks powers that has some nervousness about majorities and the wisdom of crowds.
Now, you write that the framers of the Constitution hoped the electors would be independent, well-informed about national policy and potential leaders. That is not part of the criteria today, right? The people that actually become the electors don't have to do those things.
Right. You could argue that today, in fact, having independent judgment is disqualifying to become an elector because of the way that states have tried to bind electors to the results of the popular vote in their state.
Well, what about the petitions that are out there to try to get electors right now to change the vote that they were going to cast and instead cast it for the winner of the popular vote?
Well, I mean, electors, despite state laws that bind them to the state popular vote, do have the potential to become what are sometimes called faithless electors. That is to say, to vote for somebody who did not win the popular vote in that state.
And has that ever happened?
It does happen occasionally. It's never changed the outcome of the election. There was someone who basically abstained in 2000, somebody who voted for John Edwards instead of John Kerry for president in 2004. So there are state laws in a number of states that try to bind electors to the popular vote. And the Supreme Court has held that that is constitutional to try, but they've never been enforced. Nobody's ever been prosecuted. And, it would be after the fact in any case.
Do you see any chance of any kind of reform of the Electoral College system?
Well, the most popular proposal that's out there right now is called the National Popular Vote Compact. And basically each of the states in that compact promises that whoever wins the national popular vote, it will select electors who will vote for that winner rather than the person who won.
But aren't all the states that have signed on to that blue states at this point?
They are at this point. So it'll be, and even there, this does run the risk – well, two risks maybe that people were concerned with changing the Electoral College point out. One is, of course, this faithless elector problem. The other, of course, is that plurality elections have their own issues, One reason that some political theorists like the two-party system, even though it does quite overtly limit voter choice, is that it provides stability. And it provides, at least in theory, the push of the candidates towards the median voter, towards moderation and towards the middle. So if you had a system where, you could win in a, say, a five-person field with 21, 22, 25% of the vote, is it okay if somebody wins with 25%? Should we have a runoff election? Maine just adopted a ranked choice voting proposal for state elections. Is that something that would be worked in? So there are other questions that are raised by the reforms, and some people are nervous that those possibly unintended consequences have not been discussed enough.
And could be worse than the current system.
Well, certainly for some, yeah.
That's Andrew Rudalevich, who's a professor of government at Bowdoin College. Andrew, thank you so much.
Great to be with you.